This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with me and with me, T. Shawik and Juliet Jacobs. It's World Humanitarian Day today, and that's a day to honor humanitarian personnel and those who have lost their lives working for humanitarian causes. So earlier we looked at what humanitarian work involves and how we can participate in this in our very small way.
Yes, and we're continuing that topic and that theme, you know, in our second story. But before that, we do have a Twitter poll running, and we're asking you whether you support or help any humanitarian organization. So your options are yes, I donate. Yes, I volunteer. No, but I'd like to. And overwhelmingly, about 54.5% of you said that yes, you do donate. And another almost 18% of you said yes, I volunteer. About 12% of you say no. And another 14% of you say no, but I'd like to. So keep tweeting us, you know, tweet us at BFM Radio. Or if any thoughts that you'd like to share, send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. So yes, we are still commemorating World Humanitarian Day. And now we're going to take a closer look at people who provide healthcare-related aid. So humanitarian aid, of course, can and does come in all forms, from protection to shelter, education, food, and even healthcare. Mm-hmm. And often when we think of humanitarian workers rushing into conflict or disaster zones to provide aid, we would think of UN agencies like the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, UNICEF, the World Food Programme. Mm-hmm. And then there's also other organisations like the International Committee of the Red Cross, Médecins Sans Frontières, and many, many more. And these humanitarian organizations work across the globe with the purpose of providing aid as quickly and efficiently as possible, more so when it comes to medical needs.
So when it comes to medical humanitarian aid, this includes providing medical supplies, healthcare services, even volunteers to help rescue and treat people who need it, whether it's physical or mental health. So organizations like you mentioned, the Red Cross or MSF, are well known to provide such medical aid when and where it is needed by setting up field hospitals staffed with their own aid workers and volunteers. So, you know, these days, with news being at our fingertips, the moment we hear of a disaster, man-made or otherwise, we know that what follows will be reports of humanitarian organizations and their staff hitting in as soon as time and transport allows. Especially if it's a conflict zone, humanitarian workers are actually civilians, and they're putting themselves at risk to save and help the people who need it. And even in situations of natural disasters, aid workers are often in dangerous and precarious situations, which can pose a threat to their own lives if proper precautions aren't taken.
Yes, it is during these times of crisis that we've seen how people across the world come together to help, you know, regardless of factors like language barriers, religion or political ideologies. Humanitarian organizations and their staff may not necessarily be welcomed by governments, though, especially in conflict and war zones, and in some cases are even expelled from the country. So, for example, in Sudan, the government has on several occasions restricted or banned the work of foreign humanitarian agencies. However, in most instances, these organizations are often allowed to operate because of the core principles of humanitarian action, which are humanity, neutrality, impartiality, and independence. And the priority of humanitarian action is first and foremost to help the people who are caught in the crossfire and those who require an additional helping hand rather than choosing sides in a war.
Yeah. But beyond situations of severe conflict and natural disasters, humanitarian organizations also operate and provide medical aid in countries where communities could be facing disease outbreaks or are marginalized to the point where they might not be able to easily access available healthcare. So in situations such as these, we also see global organizations like the Red Cross or MSF working together with local humanitarian organizations to ensure that humanitarian aid is provided and is made accessible to these local communities.
Yeah, and looking closer to home, humanitarian aid is just as vital here in Malaysia compared to other countries where, you know, it seems like aid is more urgent. So we have organizations like the Malaysian Red Crescent Society, MSF, as we mentioned, Mercy Malaysia, and the Imam Response and Relief Team and more, who are working to provide aid where necessary, not only outside the country, but in Malaysia as well.
Yeah, but granted, we aren't seeing large-scale humanitarian disasters here in Malaysia as we do in other parts of the world, but there have been instances in the country where humanitarian assistance was and still is crucial to help people get back on their feet and to live normal lives. Mm. So for example, think back to 2004 when parts of the country were affected by the deadly Indian Ocean tsunami, or even, you know, on a yearly basis, we know that floods occur on the eastern coast of Peninsula Malaysia, and these force thousands of people to leave their homes. And even on a regular basis, these humanitarian humanitarian organizations also provide medical aid to people and communities in the country, such as refugees who may not have access to proper health care.
Yeah, so to get a better idea of how humanitarian organizations are continuing to provide medical assistance both within Malaysia and globally, joining us via Skype today is Dirk van der Tak, Head of Mission of Médecins Sans Frontières in Malaysia. Thank you for joining us, Dirk. So in Malaysia, what sort of humanitarian work has MSF been carrying out, and how have these activities been affected by COVID-19 as well as the various movement control orders?
Yes, MSF has been working and continued working throughout the MCO. We have a fixed clinic in Penang, in Butterworth, where we see mainly refugees, asylum seekers, migrants. And we have been able, fortunately, to keep the clinic open throughout the MCO. The mobile clinics, which we also have to sort of access people who live in more remote areas and do not always have access to healthcare, we had to stop those. So that definitely had an impact on healthcare for those minorities. What is, I think, important to say is that as most of the people we work for are not from Malaysia, they're refugees and asylum seekers, like I said, they speak other languages. So we were able to compile information materials in Burmese, in Rohingya languages, so that people actually had access to this type of information. On top of that, actually, we did a community engagement survey to find out what people knew and, maybe more important, what people did not know. Mm. And then we established a partnership with an YouTube platform, Our Vision, which is a Rohingya-led media initiative, to basically have YouTube videos in Rohingya to inform people how they can protect themselves, how to make a mask, about some mental health issues, to sort of give basic information what COVID is all about. So to make sure that people actually understand what is happening in the world around them and can react to it.
And, you know, despite the loosened movement restrictions, are you still seeing any obstacles to providing medical humanitarian aid as compared to pre-COVID times?
Well, fortunately for us, the mobile clinics now are up and running again. So once a week, we can go into sort of the community. The fixed clinic is also almost back to pre-COVID era with 60 to 80 patients per day. But I think the point there to make is that despite that we sort of are almost back to sort of February, January levels, in particular, the Rohingya refugees who we target, they have been badly affected by the MCO and by COVID. I'm sure that you are aware that there was this very hateful campaign, anti-Rohingya, anti-refugees, anti-migrants. Yeah. So a lot of people, a lot of Rohingyas were and are actually afraid to seek health care. So they wait for a long time and very often come to us that basically primary health care is not what they need, but that we need to refer them to hospital for secondary care. And they tell us heartbreaking stories of evictions, of people losing their jobs, of children not allowed to go to school, of Rohingya not being able to allow to pray in the mosque, etc., etc. So mental health, which is one of the components of our program, definitely is in very urgent need at the moment.
Dirk, what are the challenges for MSF to continue operating and providing aid as normal during these times?
Well, you know, MSF is an international organization. We work in almost 70 countries all over the world. And I'm sure everybody is aware that international flights have been very badly disrupted. So for us, that means, first of all, that it's sometimes very challenging to bring in the international staff that we need to work in our programs, but maybe even more important, so the supplies, and that was in particular an issue at the start of the pandemic. So fortunately, in Malaysia, we have very competent and able Malaysian staff, but as a consequence, also some of them have to step up, sometimes have to work in double roles, make longer days, make longer hours. But for Malaysia, we so far manage.
How similar or different is the situation globally, and how is MSF coping with continuing to provide humanitarian aid at the global level?
Yeah, Malaysia is doing very well, and I think we should all be very proud of that. But as you know, in many other countries, the situation is very different. So there are many challenges overseas. I think primarily what MSF will first of all do is to sort of reach out to the local or state authorities to provide care for COVID-19 patients and to assess if basically there is something that MSF can do, either in supplying with resources or in terms of more hands-on assistance to assist the government in sort of response to the pandemic. Traditionally, and I think that's also what you see in Malaysia, MSF is always looking for the people who are overlooked, who are forgotten, the most vulnerable and at-risk populations. Mm-hmm. So in many countries, as you probably know, we work in refugee settings, and there we see that sort of the healthcare structure often has collapsed. There are, of course, examples in countries where the healthcare structure is not so well developed, that healthcare workers are afraid that medical doctors and nurses have been infected with COVID, or that their colleagues have been in quarantine. And then you see sort of how domino stones start falling. Mm-hmm. because of the pandemic, it's not only that people sort of with COVID complaints do not have access to healthcare, but that also that more other essential services are no longer able to run. So for us, the priority in that sense is always to protect the healthcare workers, so that in general the system can continue to work, and that sort of the specialists, the hospitals, the clinics who are targeted for addressing the pandemic can function, but that other facilities, hospitals and clinics can still take care of people with, you know, normal complaints like diabetes or heart disease or blood pressure or fever, et cetera, because that, of course, all goes on.
And how is MSF and its staff coping with continuing to provide humanitarian aid while the pandemic is still raging around us?
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been tough for everybody, I think, around the world. But I think also the pandemic teaches us that the world is a global community and that we are all interconnected. I think it's clear that if we want to fight this epidemic, it's no longer all about me, myself and I, but that it's really about all of us, and that we can only beat this pandemic together. And that's actually very close to the fundamental principle of humanitarian action, that every life matters. So I think in that sense, it's tough. It's tough for health workers. It's tough for all of us. But I think also we should look at some lessons that we can learn from this pandemic. Fortunately, MSF, as a medical humanitarian organization, has lots of experience in fighting epidemics. We have extensively worked, for example, in the Ebola outbreak in DRC, in West Africa. I remember myself being involved in SARS in the early 2000s. So we do have sort of the assistance and the expertise in place to assist wherever necessary. And hopefully by reaching out, like I said, to government and to sort of other authorities, we can build a trust and work together to fight this epidemic.
And, you know, you are providing the necessary medical help to those who need it. But at the same time, why is it important to make sure that aid workers' health, you know, especially their mental health, is also cared for?
Yeah, it's been tough. And I think in particular in the beginning of the pandemic, you know, it's always there's always something that people are afraid of, the unknown. And we have seen in many countries sort of suddenly that people came to hospital and that people were dying in big numbers. So that is very stressful as a healthcare worker, as a medical doctor. You know, your job is to cure, your job is to heal. And if you have, and that was, I think, in particular also in more developed countries, a very new and unknown situation, because you have the resources, the hospitals, the tools, the medications, you think, to address people's needs, yet you are not able to sort of save people's lives. And on top of that, it was hard work, and it probably is in many hospitals still hard work. So long hours, And I think for many healthcare workers, there was also an element, you know, always people then are afraid. If you have a cough, if you have a sneeze, you think, oh, maybe I'm infected too. What about my family? What about my parents? What about my children? Can I still see them? So all of that weighs very heavily on sort of healthcare workers, but also other people who have been involved in fighting the pandemic. So what we do as MSF is to be as transparent and open as possible to create space for our colleagues, in particular the medical staff in the clinic, to ventilate, to share, to sort of take a rest, to sometimes cry a little bit, to also laugh a little bit, mm-hmm. and to basically to get all these emotions out of their system so that they can continue the work.
And how does MSF provide mental health support for its staff?
We provide mental health support, so you can think that's one-on-one. So we basically have a discussion with people, like I said, for people just to vent, but also to have more group discussions to discuss, in particular when there were some heartbreaking cases. I think as a medical professional, there are always some cases that for whatever reason stay with you because you bonded with the patient, because something happened, because it happened at a moment of the day that you were very tired, or simply because it's a young person, somebody you connect with. So to let people to vent, to let people sort of reflect on what happened, it's important to talk. And even for healthcare professionals, you know, sometimes it's difficult. Some people like to bottle it up and they just feel that it's now altogether fighting the pandemic. So we deal with the emotions later. But I think it's also important to make the point that, no, it's not about later. It's about now. It's about sort of opening up, making sure that you feel safe, that you feel secure, and that you can continue your work. Because in the end, if the health workers cannot do the job, then, you know, the fighting the pandemic will fail.
You know, Doug, the theme for this year's World Humanitarian Day is real life heroes. So we have to ask, what drives you and others in MSF to continue doing what you do, you know, to provide aid even through a pandemic?
Yeah, well, I mean, the simple answer is what we do. It's what we are trained for. It's what we are motivated to do for. And as an MSFer, a longtime MSFer, you know, I've been working in war, in conflict. And it's going back a little bit to what I said earlier. I very much believe that the world is a global community and that it's not always about me, but that only my happiness, my health, my well-being depends also on the health and well-being of others. So I find strength, I find motivation in sort of seeing that we can do something in the for you know, even if it is a drop in the ocean, even if it is just helping one life. But I think if many people together join hands and help to fight this pandemic, we can definitely beat it.
And lastly, why is it important to ensure uninterrupted humanitarian aid throughout this pandemic?
Well, I mean, the pandemic, I think, unfortunately, is taking longer, and I think it's fair to say will take longer than we initially thought or feared. And now even our clinic is based in Penang, and you know that we have been for 91 days in Penang without any infections. And since a week or so, we have now seen new cases popping up. Similar examples from, for example, Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, where we thought actually we got quite far. And then, boom, there again, there are new cases. So I think the point is also to make that there are still many things about COVID that we do not know. In the meantime, people get infected, people are dying. So if we don't step up, and in particular, if we don't look at the health needs of the most vulnerable people, then cross-infections will continue to happen. And we have seen, and we see now in the world where we're talking about sort of, you know, the future with vaccines, that there's some states are already sort of buying up large stocks of vaccines, of medications. So I think it's extremely important for an organization like MSF to be in the field and to make sure through our medical work, but also to advocacy activities, that the most vulnerable groups are not forgotten and that vaccines, medications are available for all at an affordable price.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Dirk. That was Dirk van der Tak, head of mission of MSF, or Doctors Without Borders, here in Malaysia. And right now, you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we're seeing humanitarian aid becoming even riskier for the aid workers. Mm. On top of the usual precarious circumstances that they might already be prepared for, there is, of course, also the COVID-19 pandemic to be concerned about. And in recent months, we've been, we've seen several situations which required humanitarian assistance, such as, you know, the very recent Beirut explosion. There was a landslide at a jade mine in Myanmar, and of course the monsoon season floods across India and Bangladesh. Mm. And, you know, as we keep mentioning, the theme for this year's World Humanitarian Day is real life heroes. It's really important that we also recognize that humanitarians are frontliners as well.
Yep.
Yes. And, you know, we did ask you over on social media, over on Twitter, whether you support or help any humanitarian organizations. And 56.3% of you said that yes, you do, through donation. Another 19% of you have said yes, you do, but through volunteering. 10.9%, almost 11% of you have said no. And another 14% of you have said no, but you'd like to. And we do hope, you know, after listening to, you know, all our different speakers today, that you do help these aid workers. They obviously need a lot of assistance.
Mm, that's right. And in fact, after the 3 p.m. news on Live and Learn, Dashrin Johan will be speaking to Prema Tiagu, co-founder and vice president of Pertubuhan Pembangunan Hope Selangor. And that's another story about local humanitarian organization and the great work that they're doing here in Malaysia. So do tune in for that. And that's all the time that we have for today's show. You can look at, you can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Or drop us a line on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest. You can also look it up on the BFM app or on Spotify. And now we will leave you with, of course, the most famous humanitarian aid song, We Are the World by USA for Africa. Thanks for listening to The Daily Digest, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.